joining us right now is Kaylin Kalish. She's NFL writer for Monday Morning Quarterback. She's been with us before, and we look forward to talking to her again. Spent some time at the Super Bowl a couple weeks ago as well. So how you doing, Kaylin?
Hey, how are you guys? I'm doing well.
Doing good. Hey, before we get into the serious stuff, though, Paul, I've got a debate here. I went to your Twitter page to do a little research. The photo on your Twitter page, not your cheerleading shot, but the other one. We're trying to anticipate. Okay, I'm going to get... Paul, I have no idea. I'm going to throw out my guess. You tell me if I'm right. Because I can't recognize. Is that you and Icky Woods doing the Icky Shuffle?
It is.
Bam.
Yeah,
nice job.
Called it. I thought so. When did that take place?
That was... that was probably 3 years ago.
Oh.
Maybe 4 years ago now. That was, like, my first year on the job. We did, like, a... It was 3 years ago, yeah. It was for, on our way to Super Bowl 50, we did like a road trip. And since it was the 50th anniversary of the Super Bowl, we were just doing like stories from Super Bowls past and interviewing people who had played in the Super Bowl and things like that. And so we went through Cincinnati, and Icky Woods is still living in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did a quick little video of him teaching us how to do the Icky Shuffle. It was fun.
So do you do what you go on the dance clubs now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's my go-to.
Well, if you want to see it, folks, go to her Twitter account. It's at Kaylin Kaler, K-A-L-Y-N-K-A-H-L-E-R. You mentioned the Super Bowl. You were at the Super Bowl a couple weeks ago. Now, how many have you been to?
That was my fourth one, yeah. I've been to 50, 51, 52, 53.
Talk a little about being at the Super Bowl, and how, is year to year significantly different? Is it kind of the same routine as far as year's concerned, or what is it like going to the Super Bowl?
This was a different one for me because normally, like I had mentioned before, we had done like a road trip there, and so I wouldn't get there until Thursday or even Friday of the Super Bowl week. So I just get there for the end of the week and the game. But this year we didn't do a road trip, so I was there all week, and that was kind of an interesting experience because I thought Atlanta was a great host city. And they managed the whole situation. It's just like a cluster of people. It's really, the logistics are stunning when you go to one and you're like, how do they do this? Like, this is insane. But Atlanta did a great job. So I was there the whole week. And so it was interesting going to different like press conferences for the two different head coaches and then the media availabilities with the players and the assistant coaches. And the one thing that I was like, impressed by because I hadn't been there all week before was that they actually make the assistant coaches available like three times during that week. And if you cover the NFL, you know how rare that is. Like a lot of teams make their assistants available once a month. I think that's the rules. They're supposed to be available once a month. But it easily turns into like a couple times a season for most teams. So you like rarely get to talk to the assistant coaches who are super important. So that was kind of cool with the Super Bowl layout is that the assistant coaches are available all the time, like three times that week.
What's a little something about Super Bowl being at that maybe people don't know? Maybe there's some kind of behind the scenes that people might anticipate or assume is going on. It's, I guess, what we think the Super Bowl is and those that really go there, what's it really like? Is there some kind of behind the scenes thing that you might be able to tell us that nobody knew about?
I feel like people, I'm trying to think, well, one thing I think people know is just like it's just like a spot for like celebrities and athletes from all different kinds of sports to sort of congregate for the week. I think a lot of that is because, you know, they're doing promotions, like marketing, paid marketing promos. But, you know, I ran into Usain Bolt, two different Olympians were probably the highlight of my week. I saw Usain Bolt. And then I saw Gabby Douglas, who was a women's gymnast, gold medalist. So that was cool. And I ran into like both of them just kind of like strolling through downtown Atlanta. And so if you don't have your eyes peeled, so if you ever go to a Super Bowl, you got to have your eyes peeled to who you might see because it's really a great spot to people watch and see all different kinds of athletes and celebrities.
Hey, Kaylin, this is Paul. It's good to talk to you again. One of the stories you did was on Rob Gronkowski, and you kind of took a look at, you know, his success through the eyes of the other players on the field. What did you learn about him that you didn't already know, and how'd you come up with that story idea?
Well, I feel like a lot of the talk with his, every time he did media availability, the conversation would inevitably turn to, are you going to retire after the season? So that's kind of the major storyline with him because, you know, there's been rumors about that. And even last year, he was almost traded. And I think he probably may have retired if he had been traded. But so everyone's kind of expecting him to retire after the season. So I thought doing like an appreciation of him through his teammates and even his opponents would be interesting. So I just kind of went around and asked guys, like, what was his best play? And it was really a hard question for a lot of them because they would start, like, rattling off just a number of different situations. But I think the most popular answer was what he did in the I think it was, like, week 15, late in the regular season to clinch the AFC top spot there against the Steelers at Heinz Field. And I think there were, like, 2 minutes left in the game, and he made, like, 5 out of 7 catches, something like that, and a lot of them were very impressive. One was like way down on the ground, had to really dive for it, and so everybody said like that drive was sort of his best work, all put together in one drive.
Another story, Kalen, that I want to talk about. I'm sure you probably got a lot of response to this. Your piece about how a cow becomes a football. I love that story. And tell me a little bit about where the idea come from, and then kind of the whole process, whole genesis of putting that thing together, and how long it took. Because based by reading it, I get a sense that you started on this like last spring.
So I started it actually last January. So it basically took an entire year. Though I was done writing it in like October, so it was just we were holding it just to get the right spot in the magazine. But when it was all said and done, it took about a year. And it's funny because the idea had been sitting around, like we have a whiteboard at our office with just kind of like evergreen ideas that people will get to eventually. And this idea had been on that whiteboard for as long as I've worked here, so 3.5 years. And I think it's as old as the NMQB site itself, which would be like 2013. So it's a really old story idea that, like, we would talk about all the time. Every year, right when we were doing our Super Bowl story planning, we'd be like, all right, are we going to do this story this year? But it was always too late to get the ball rolling on it around Super Bowl time. Like, you really had to have already started it by then. So it just sat around and sat around. And then last year, I was like, you know what? I'm sick of this story. I'm going to do it. Like, somebody's got to do this story. Like, I'm so tired of hearing about it. So I started doing it, and because we were going to the Wilson Football Factory last January for another reason. I think we were doing like a podcast story there. So I was like, you know what, while I'm there, like I'm going to ask around and see how we could do this and figure it out and whatever. And so that's when I met the farmer whose cows we used, because he lives right near the town in Ohio where the Wilson Football Factory is. So yeah, it took me a lot of work and a lot of like planning, and I thought the story had died about 4 times in the process, because once we got the news back that they weren't good enough to be game balls, I was like, oh dang, now what do I do? Like, this is sad. Like, I knew it was still going to be a story, but I had to like sort of figure out another way to get it to an NFL team. And that was hard in itself, because a lot of teams didn't really want anything to do with this story. For probably obvious reasons, because even though every team uses the same footballs, like they'd rather not like publicize how they're made.
Right.
So that was difficult, but the Bengals were great and they were super helpful and just ready to help.
And you were very, you know, the story is very well detailed. I got kicked reading on it, and you know, you can paint that picture all the way through, and basically pretty graphic too in terms of what happens between the cow and all that. So I mean, I guess it might turn a stomach or two, but that was a really interesting story. You know, you mentioned something about until it got in the magazine, and Paul and I were talking about how we're substantially older than you are. So we grew up with Sports Illustrated strictly as a magazine. How big a kick is it for you, because you're in a generation that's pretty much an online generation? How much of a kick is it for you to see it in print in a magazine, or is that not such a big deal because you see it online so much?
No, I love it. And I've had like some shorter stuff in the magazine, but I never had what we call like a bonus, which is just like a multi-page feature. So I've been waiting like all year to get this story in, because I knew that they wanted it in the magazine. And I knew how good our photographer was, and I'd seen the photos. And so I was really excited for that, because the pictures look good online, but it looks even better in the magazine when you have like the opening spread of the group of cows and the football. So I loved it. It was exciting.
Well, I know your dad was excited about it, too, and rightly so. But, hey, I wanted to ask you quickly, too, the news about Kareem Hunt yesterday signing with the Browns. Kalen, I mean, obviously you cover the NFL. Your thoughts on the Browns signing him, thoughts on the Bears possibly giving them the idea when they came out and said, you know, they had talked to him already. And as a Bears fan yourself, you know, what are your thoughts about him going to a team? Are you happy the Bears didn't get him? What do you think his future holds with the Browns? What's your take on the whole situation?
Well, I wish I had more information because it seems like not that much time has passed since he was cut from the Chiefs and supposedly is undergoing anger management therapy and, you know, violence against women training or whatever sort of treatments he's undergone. It just doesn't seem like it's been long enough time. I feel like maybe if he had been signed before training camp, it could be a little bit more, I don't know, believable and more of a positive thing. But as of right now, I have a hard time seeing how, like, he really could have bettered himself in the short amount of time that has passed. And then in the Brown statement that they released, they did acknowledge the fact, like, you know, he still has to earn his way back. Like, just because we signed him to this deal does not mean, you know, he's going to play, because the NFL is still doing its investigation and we don't know where that stands yet. So he could still face further suspension or punishment for that. But I don't know, it seemed too early to me to really know that, like, he's going to be okay and has shown remorse and has bettered himself. So the whole thing just seemed premature. And then the other part, you know, about him being in Cleveland, that's where he's from. And that's where this situation where, you know, he attacked a woman, that's where this happened. So I'm a little wary of him having to live in Cleveland. I just feel like he's really going to have a strong support network there and to make sure that he's not hanging out with, you know, the group of friends that he was when this occurred. Not saying that that's their fault, but it's just that lifestyle that led to that. So I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. And, like, I totally think, like, he can be a better person and come back from this. It just seems kind of early, and it seems like Cleveland is going to be tough for him to live there.
Last question, Kalen. What you got coming up next? What stories are you working on? Or do you get a little bit of a break now that the NFL season's done to kind of have a mini vacation?
I don't, only because this year I'm, like, leading the charge on our draft coverage.
Ah.
So, yeah, so there's not much of a break. Right now I am working on a story. It'll be up later this week. I reported it all during the season. I just never got a chance to write it. It is about, it's hard to explain, but it's about, like, shutdown cornerbacks. You know, the cornerbacks who, like, follow the same receiver, who track the same guy during a game. And I noticed this when I was at Packers-Vikings game earlier this season. Their cornerback, Xavier Rhodes, he will usually follow one guy, one receiver, the number one receiver, during the entire game. And I noticed him in between plays. He was standing in front of the defensive line. So most guys will just kind of wait close to where they're going to be playing on the field. So, like, most cornerbacks will be at the back of the formation. But he was in front of the defensive line, like, standing right on top of the ball and just, like, staring into the Packers huddle. And he did this every single play. And I'd never really noticed him doing that before, or noticed any player doing that before. So then I started asking around about it, and I interviewed him, and I interviewed Darrell Revis and Lester Hayes and, you know, some other great cornerbacks, Patrick Peterson, the Cardinals. And they all told me, like, this is a strategy that they do. Just one, for efficiency, because their guy could go right or left. So if they're center, they're just going to expend the least amount of energy. Mm-hmm. But then also because it's sort of like an intimidation factor of, like, I'm on you, I'm following you, like, you can't get rid of me. So it's kind of an interesting story. So I'll be writing that this week.
All right. When do you think that'll be coming out online?
Think of what? Sorry.
When do you think that will be online? Then we'll be able to chance to read that.
Oh, Thursday.
Thursday. Yep. Okay, great.
It'll be Thursday.
All right. Well, she's Kalen Kaler. She's the NFL writer for the Monday Morning Quarterback for Sports Illustrated. Kalen, thank you so much for being with us. We really do appreciate your time. And
thank you.
I'm sure we're going to look forward to talking again later on down the road.
Yeah, have a great day.
All right, Kalen.
You too. Take care, Kalen.